Watching an interview on TV a few years ago, I saw a man retell a story about his ancestor, an enslaved young woman in the 1800s in Virginia who was bought by a Colonel Wright who took his new purchase back to his plantation in Tallahatchie County, Mississippi. Watching him tell the story simply, straightforwardly, that was the moment that I realized the classics are not obsolete. Chekhov has long fascinated me, and The Cherry Orchard, which opened on his last birthday in 1904, seems to encapsulate so much of his life and work that I come back to it over and over, amazed by its depth, breadth, and relevance. In 1904, the Russian royal family faced the beginning of the long, slow decline that ended so tragically for them in a basement in the Ural Mountains 16 years later. The world was already changing, and the rise of a formerly serf class in Russia, after their emancipation in 1861, was creating social mobility for the first time in that strictly feudal society. The Cherry Orchard looks at the microcosm of a world grappling with a many-faceted change. The four-act play is quite complicated, but the major issue at hand concerns an aristocratic family who are forced to sell their estate, complete with their beloved cherry orchard. In the midst of the chaos and bad decisions, it is revealed that the purchaser in the deal is a nouveau riche businessman, the grandson of former serfs on the estate. Part of what books and films try to do with concepts like slavery or serfdom, which seem large and faceless to us, is to put an individual identity to these experiences and create a sense of connection between people. For example, in the movie Glory, we met a former slave and gravedigger named John Rollins, played by Morgan Freeman, who left his family in bondage when he ran off to join the Union Army. Chekhov is very adaptable. For me, one of the most memorable productions of The Cherry Orchard I've seen was staged here in the early 90s by Ad Hoc Theater Company and set the play in the American South in the 1960s. At the time, I thought the parallels were surprising and poignant, and though I had grown up in the New South with very liberal parents who soaked my life in the speeches and actions of the civil rights movement, I was too young then to really understand what an inherited family home means to a person, or that the threat of the loss could make you feel like you couldn't breathe. And though I empathized with the struggles of the freed serfs and their offspring trying to make their way in a brave new world, I didn't fully understand then what providing for yourself actually meant. It would also be 10 years before I heard the story of one particular slave sold to Mississippi to Colonel Wright. At 34, I think about her and realize that by the time she was my age, she probably had several children, and knowing infant mortality rates, she had probably buried at least one, maybe two. Just like my life would be impossible for her to imagine. The horror stories of life on a plantation make it hard for me to truly fathom what each hour of her day looked like. But how much stranger for her to look beyond the veil to the life of her great-great-grandson, Morgan Freeman, who now lives as the wealthiest farmer in Tallahatchie County, Mississippi.